I'm just out for a little walk, early afternoon. Toronto, it's been extremely good weather, crazy good. It's March 20th, 21st, somewhere around there, maybe 22nd, I don't know. You can tell I don't have a job yet because I don't know what day it is. It's Tuesday, I know that. And all the snow is basically gone. What little winter there was, it's passed. People tell me this is an unusually good winter in Toronto, but man, it's been fantastic. And if you look at Toronto on a map, it's much further south than I realized. It lines up with Michigan. If you look at a map of the United States, there's this big piece missing right next to Michigan, and that's where Toronto is. It's almost like this shouldn't be a part of Canada. You know, it's like, hey, you guys get, you can have Alaska. Which is huge, man. I didn't realize that either till I was looking at a map the other day. Alaska is giant. I just had no idea it was so big. But it's like, hey, fuck it. You guys have that. Give us Toronto. Give us this little bit. We need it. I guess it's really the geography of the lakes that must have determined the original borders. But yeah, the weather here's been really good. It's a little bit overcast today, but no big deal. I've been trying to... I don't know. My sleep schedule's been going to shit because I've been playing video games. I was playing this old Rockstar game, not super old, but a few years old, called Bully. It came out, I believe, after San Andreas, before Grand Theft Auto 4. And it's really good. It's like the Grand Theft Auto 4 feel of a smaller game, a more contained environment. And instead of being a crazy, you know, sociopath who runs around killing everyone, fighting the cops, you're just a kid in school. So it makes a lot more sense with the Grand Theft Auto setup, where you can't really lose, you know? In GTA, it didn't make sense. You get gunned down and you just wake up in a hospital. But in this one, you know, there's no killing. It's just kids in a private school. So if you get caught by somebody, by an authority figure, they just send you to class or take you to the dorms. And it's a really fun game. Anyway, it's been fucking up my sleep schedule. So I woke up today and I was like, all right, let's get out of the house. Let's just go for a walk. Let's go try to find somewhere I haven't been before. I was going to try to get to High Park, but instead I went down by the water. And I love having the water here. I didn't realize, I guess, growing up in a town with a big river that cuts through the middle, Fredericton, unofficially called the River City, I think it's important for me to have water around. Because out in Vancouver, there was all kinds of water. And here in Toronto, there's all kinds of water that I'm standing by right now. What was there in New York? The fucking East River? Blah, gag me with a fucking cock. Terrible. You can't walk along the whole shore, unfortunately. There's these old kind of factory things that are from who knows how long ago. Fenced off, you gotta walk around them, but there's not really that many of them. And yeah, it's just nice. It's like, I don't know, the gulls and the water and the beach. The rocky beach, it's not like a sand beach. I really like it. Anyway, I was listening to a song and I talk to myself in my head. I just run thoughts through my head that occurred to me after a minute or two that what I was thinking was ham radio commentary, what I would say about this song. And then I realized I had my recorder, so it's like, well, why don't I just fucking record? This is a song called A Song for a Son by the Smashing Pumpkins, and what Billy Corgan's doing right now is he's releasing one song at a time from his new album, which is called Kaleidoscope something? Or Tear Garden? What the fuck is it called? Anyway, he's released 3 songs so far, and he's just going to release them one song at a time until this whole massive 40-song album is done. And the first one was called A Song for a Son. And I liked it, but I didn't love it. Something about the production of it sounded weird. Like, I wonder if he's going to remix these things when the whole deal is done and he puts it out as an official album, because it just didn't sound... It sounded thin. It sounded like the stereo spectrum wasn't being used fully. Something about it felt off. I'm not an audio engineer. I don't really know these things. I also noticed Zeitgeist. He produced pretty much himself, I think. No, some guy helped him, but he had a lot to do with it. The mix sounded weird to me in Zeitgeist. It's like the vocals were too loud. There was, I don't know, when you think back to especially Siamese Dream, but also Melancholy and the Infinite Sadness, those old 90s albums by the Smashing Pumpkins. I don't know, there was like a lushness, you know, a richness that I don't feel is there in these new songs. Melancholy was kind of 50-50. It had some really just rough songs and then some really pretty ones. But this is like a really pretty song that doesn't have the really pretty production. But I found a live version, and I feel like in this live one, this song really comes alive the way it's supposed to. I kind of dug this song, but then when I heard this live one, I'm like, fuck yeah, that's the shit right there. That's the song. That sounds awesome. And it made me think about how, with a band like the Smashing Pumpkins, it's tempting to just go back and listen to the old stuff, you know? Just to relive the glory days, but I'm sure that's boring for Billy Corgan. Actually, I remember when he was touring with his solo album, which he has so much stuff that I haven't dug through yet. I haven't really given his solo album a proper chance yet. But he wasn't playing any old Smashing Pumpkins stuff at the time, and he would get annoyed at crowds that kept requesting old songs. And I sympathize, you know, it must be much more exciting for him to move on to new stuff, but you just can't, man. You can't just divorce yourself from your past. That's why everyone's there. I mean, that's why you're a superstar. Sad to say, but that was because of those songs. 1993 through 1996 is the thing, is why everyone is still paying attention. Sad but true. But then a song like this, I guess it's tricky because the song has to grow on you, you know? I had to listen to this song 10 or 15 times in its original, or in its studio format, before hearing this one was like, fuck yeah, oh, awesome. Like, now I would be excited to hear this song live. But for these people listening to this live version, who had never heard it before, was it any good at all? Was it exciting? Who knows, you know? It's a tricky balancing act. And this is all the kind of shit that I was just thinking in my brain. Doo-doo-doo, let's just walk along and think about music nerdery. So it's like, a good thing I have this fucking podcast, or what the hell would I do with all of these fucking rambling thoughts. Man, I made myself a coffee before I left the house, and it's dollar store instant coffee with hot chocolate powder. It's fucking disgusting. It's so terrible. I need to get some real coffee. It's so fucking gross. I really love, though, hot chocolate powder and coffee. It's so much better than sugar. It does the exact same thing as sugar, but with that little extra added taste of chocolate, it's much better. Hey, there's a duck. Hey, ducky. Quack, 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 here comes the silly goose. Here's Song for a Son by Smashing Pumpkins.
This is a song for a son. This is a song for a sailor. A son I never had. This is a song for a kid. This is a song for a tailor. He stitched up my old hat. He stitched up my old hat. This is a song for a blown out bird. The kind that don't return to the nest. This is a song for a star. This is a song for a space invader who flew into the sun, never to return, never to return. This is a song for a son. This is a song for a sailor. The best I ever had, you sail without a map. This is a song for that kid. This is a song for a tailor who stitched up my old ties before I broke it out. All apart. And I am one of many, many more to come, many more to come. Thank you, thank you.
I just found a little dock, this little narrow dock that comes out into the water with a keep off sign, which I am choosing to disregard that advice. It's definitely really old and shitty, and it's missing planks and kind of bounced under my feet a little bit as I walked. But now I'm at the end of it, sitting down. It's weird, man. I got this like weird fear of heights, and in some ways I was feeling a bit of it here, just being out over the water. I don't know, it's like, just because it's an unnatural place to be, how being high up is just like not natural either, and it's just immediately set something off in my head of like, this ain't where we're supposed to be. I never used to have this when I was a kid, but it's getting quite bad as I'm getting older. Even now, I just caught myself, I'm sitting on the edge of this dock, leaning back sort of semi-consciously just to keep my recorder away from the water, like afraid I'm going to drop it. But why would I drop it? I'm not going to, never dropped it before. I don't know, I've been trying to deal with the fear of heights thing a bit lately. One technique I've been using is to pretend that I have extremely long legs. Like my head is at its normal height because my legs happen to be 30 feet long. I still feel the water thing. It's almost like minor vertigo. Oh, weird. It's just so weird. I don't know how any of this happened. Anyway, sometimes that works, the pretending that I'm tall. There, if I just look out over the water, I feel fine. It's only when I look down into it. How weird, man. I mean, I'm not high up. My feet dangling off the edge can almost touch the water. I'm like, you know, a couple of feet from the water. This doesn't make any sense. I don't know what's the matter with me. There were seasonal job postings for the CN Tower, and I decided not to apply because even if you just work at the gift shop, you got to go up in that fucking thing. There's another gift shop at the top or something, and I don't think I could. I just don't think I could do it. That being said, though, let me tell you a bit about this room that I moved into, this place that I got. The first place I was going to move into in here in Toronto seemed pretty cool. The guy I was moving in with was my age. He was a musician. I had keyboards and guitars around, and it fell through at the last minute. He gave me some story about renovations or something, but I think he just found someone else who wanted to move in. But this other place I got, it's closer to downtown. It's a little more expensive. It's $475 a month, but that's nothing by like compared to what I was paying in New York. Oh, I meant to mention too about that when I was talking about water, how there didn't seem to be any water in New York. I mean, they got the Statue of Liberty, they got the fucking ocean and shit, but it's not accessible. Like here, the water is like a few blocks from my house. In Vancouver, it's always easy to get to the water. In my hometown, but yeah, in New York, it might as well not be there. I guess that's the New York motto. There's an awful lot of stuff there, all kinds of stuff, but it's so hard to get to that it doesn't, you know, everything is a big ordeal. Everything's a mission. You can't just fucking stroll and enjoy. But this place I'm living, I really like it because I usually end up living in basement apartments, traditionally. This place, it's a very thin apartment. It's third floor, top of the building. I got to go up these narrow stairs. And then there's this cool little deck in the back on the roof. And from there, I can see downtown Toronto. I can see the CN Tower. At night, it looks really beautiful, and I can just go out there and sit. There's wireless internet. I can bring my little laptop out there. It's really beautiful. And my room is right next to that. Then there's this little narrow kitchen, a bathroom, and the other guy's room. But from my bedroom, where the desk was, it was already furnished, which is handy because I don't own anything. I can sit at this desk and open up the curtains and see all of downtown Toronto. And this building I'm in is just a touch higher than most of the other buildings around, so I can see across them. It's really great, and I like being above ground. And this one doesn't... like, where Chris is staying, where I was staying with him the first month I was here, it was like the fifth floor of like a hotel-type place. And those windows kind of frightened me. They had these windows, these narrow windows that go from the floor to the ceiling. And it's just weird to stand in front of them because you can just see out into the world and you're way high up and it doesn't even feel like a window because it's from floor to ceiling. Really unnerving to me. But I don't feel bad at all in this place I'm at because you can see rooftops and the patio and, you know, it would be like, you know, you could just hop out my window, hop onto the roof, climb down, like, it's fine. You know, there's no sense of height where I could be hurt. I guess that's what it comes down to. Ah, there's this bedroom in my parents' house where I guess I always kind of had some fear of heights. I thought I didn't, but when fire drills were a big thing when you're a kid, There was one bedroom where I could hop out the window where there was a fire onto the porch roof and then just hop down and it would be fine. And I liked sleeping in that room because I didn't worry. Whereas the other bedroom, it was just a long sheer drop two stories down onto a concrete patio. And I don't know, this bullshit they tell kids of like you can tie fucking sheets together and make a, that's a, man, it used to really worry me. I used to think about that a lot, like what would happen if I had to get out these windows. Anyway, this place I'm in now, yeah, so I get up, I got my desk in front of this window, and it feels like I'm in a treehouse. I don't know, it's like I have this nice little room and it's all contained and I have all my stuff. There's not a lot of extra room in the kitchen, so I keep a lot of my stuff in the room. And when it's windy, since the building is higher than the other buildings around, just by the one floor, the wind really hits it a lot. But yeah, I really feel like I'm living in a treehouse, and it just feels really cool. Feels like I'm on this little adventure in Toronto. Granted, I'm a 30-year-old man, but it's like, yeah, man, I got my treehouse, I got my computer. Oh, and I got a monitor. The corner store by my house, the guy bought a flat screen, so he's just getting rid of his old CRT monitor. And it was this huge, massive thing, super heavy. But it's quite big and widescreeny. And, so I got it for free. I just had to buy a power cord, which was like $5, brand new. And what I did is I hooked it up to the laptop, so I have the dual screen thing. But I turned the CRT monitor on its side, and then you can just tell Windows 7 that your other screen is oriented portrait style. And then, so I've got the laptop monitor, which is normal, and then the other monitor I can slide things to, and it's, you know, sideways, so if I am writing something or I want something to be in a piece of paper format, I can do that, and it's so neat. I don't know, it makes like the computer and the internet and working on stuff feel new and exciting. And those monitors are better for video editing anyway. It's much easier to tell darkness and brightness levels and color correction than it is on a flat screen monitor. All right, let's play a song very different from that Smashing Pumpkins song. Nice and simple. This is a band called Smudge that I always really liked. They're a mid-level Australian band from the 90s that pretty much the only reason anyone knew them was they had some associations with the Lemonheads. They really weren't very well known. But I always kind of thought if I had a band, this type of band is probably what I would want to have. It just seems cool. It's just this sort of fuzzy guitar rock, you know? These are like, these would make such nice little acoustic strummy songs, and they do when they do that, but instead they go with the just the fuzzy garage sound. And I just really like his songwriting. He just writes, he's wrote a gangload of just really cool, catchy little tunes. I really like his stuff. So this is a song called It's Over by Smudge that's been in my Slush folder for some time. I've been meaning to play. And now I will. Hey, by the way, I now that I've been sitting on this dock for however many minutes, I don't feel weird at all. I feel totally comfortable. So that's cool. People like say I should try to get over my fear of heights. I was like, well, that's not going to happen. That's not possible. But who knows? Maybe it is. Maybe if I got that job at the CN Tower, it would get me. I don't know. Can you imagine just going up in that thing and just the terror in your belly? Which I try to appreciate in some ways, because do you remember when you were a kid and you could watch horror movies and they were just fucking terrifying? Or even just things like The Unsolved Mysteries, that show about missing people and stuff. The theme song of Unsolved Mysteries would scare the shit out of me when I was a kid. And it's a shame that horror movies can't do that anymore. They can gross me out, but they can't scare me anymore. And I was like, that's too bad. I kind of miss that. But it's still, a person can still be scared if that's really what you want. But then when it happens, you're like, ah, that's actually very unpleasant. I don't like it. I don't know, I might be able to get over the fear of heights thing if I really put some work into it. Start walking on suspension bridges and stuff. Oh, just saying that. There's the suspension bridge in Vancouver. Not the Capilano one. I didn't have the balls to go on the big one. It was there's a smaller one that's free. Just walking across that, holy fuck. So you're walking across. It's just like, just describing it, I feel butterflies in my stomach. It's like a fucking Ewok bridge, you know? There's goddamn, you know, the two big cables and then the planks underneath, and you're walking across and you just look down and it's so impossibly high up, just down into this this ravine, this gully, I mean, it must be, I don't know, 50 feet, maybe more, 80. It's so insanely scary. And I just can't imagine ever being comfortable with that. The only way I could make it across was to stare straight ahead and just walk. I went there with a girl I was dating, and then a couple of years later with my friend Matt, and both times scared the shit out of me. I remember one of the times these old men were just hanging out in the middle of the bridge, just looking over the edge, just staring down, having a grand old time, and they could tell I was freaked the fuck out. So they started swaying the bridge, even though there's signs that say, "Do not sway the bridge! Don't sway the bridge, you fucking dicks." Oh, God. Nightmare. But especially when I was there, like, with this chick, I couldn't... There's no other way across. You know, I could circle around an extra mile out of my way and meet her on the other end. I had no choice. I had to cross. And fuck, man. Oh, God. That's worse, because you're not contained. At least if you were in the CN Tower, you're going up in an elevator. I don't know, though. That's so high. Fuck. Like, the CN Tower doesn't seem that high when you're downtown. You can always kind of see it peeking behind buildings, but it seems like, relatively speaking, maybe it's not so huge. Where I am right now, I can't even see it. It must be behind those trees. But the farther away you get from downtown, the bigger you realize that thing is. It's twice as big as everything else. God, heights, man. Fuck. Fuck my life. Fuck my asshole. Terrible. Just talking about them and thinking about them is making me feel queasy. All right, I'm going to get the fuck off this dock. Go do some more walking. Here's It's Over by Australian cool fuzzy indie rock band Smudge. You're down by the water here in Toronto. If you're, say you're downtown and you go down by the water, by Lake Ontario, and you look to the right, you can see this whole, I mean, it's just more Toronto, but it looks like a whole different city, and it looks really far away. And there's this big white arch and all these buildings, and it's like some magical other land. I'm like, I wonder what's over there, you know, even though it's clearly just more city. But Chris said it was like that's the DLC, the downloadable content, if this was a video game. That's the next area that'll open up. And I always said, like, I gotta go over there sometime. And I did. Now I'm over there. Oh, and here's I'm looking at a map, actually. Man, High Park is pretty fucking big. And I walked right around it, totally past it. Maybe I'll catch it on the way back, or maybe later I'll go to it. Anyway, this thing, it's called the Humber River Pedestrian Bicycle Bridge. This is the big white bridge that I'm now gonna walk across pretty soon, because I'm there now. I don't know what the point of any of that story was. Anyway, I was just listening through songs, and I got to another song I've been meaning to play for a while. It's an acoustic version of the Elliott Smith song, Baby Britain. I remember somewhere, I vaguely remember, in an interview, he was saying it was one of his very few possible, not regrets, but things he wasn't certain about with the album XO. That my show XO is of course named after. And it's weird, I notice when I talk while listening to music, my voice, I talk through my nose more, it gets more nasal. I don't know why. It's something about maybe because I can't hear myself in my head the same. I don't know, it's weird, it somehow changes how I talk, just a little. I'm sure no one else would notice, but I remember him saying that he didn't really feel any studio pressure from DreamWorks Records to make his album any particular way. But somehow, some studio engineer, someone that was there, kind of talked him into doing Baby Britain with this Beatles-esque piano. Which, I don't know, I don't really know the Beatles that well. Elliott Smith apparently loved the Beatles, but he's often compared to the Beatles, as is everyone. I don't get the Beatles thing. I got nothing against the Beatles, but I don't know. People like them so much, and I just don't get it. Anyway, I always wondered what he meant. Like, how else could you do Baby Britain? But this acoustic version is significantly different. So I'm going to play the acoustic Baby Britain, and then I'll play the album version. Both excellent, excellent songs. I actually got a book. It's this little series, these little teeny books. You can probably find them at a bookstore in the music section. They're called 33 and a Third, which is also the name of the third Naked Gun movie. And it turns out it's a reference to the RPMs of a record, the rotations per minute. I knew 78s. I used to have records when I was a kid. I remember 78 RPM, but apparently 33 and a Third is also one of the settings, if I'd forgotten that. And what these books do is they take a classic album and they get a writer to just write a little wee book about the album. And it's mostly older albums that I'm not that into, but when I saw that there was one about XO, I mean, it's one of my favorite albums ever. So I had to buy it, and it was pretty interesting. They're a little bit expensive, because there's also one about In Utero, which is also one of my favorite albums. Definitely my favorite Nirvana album. So I'd really like to read that one, but I don't want to pay for it. Not right yet, not while I don't have a job. Oh, there's the CN Tower. Holy fuck, yeah, from here, like, I am quite a ways. I'm a mile or two away. And it's giant, man. Look at that thing. Bam. I always thought it was a bit of a scam to say it's, like, the second largest freestanding structure after the building in Dubai, because a lot of it is just a big pointy tip, and it's not really a building, you know? It's just an observation deck and a tower. But it's pretty cool. Yeah, I really like how downtown Toronto, it's so small, it's so contained. This just does not feel like a big city to me. So this XO book, this Elliott Smith XO book, it was pretty cool because the guy got a little highfalutin sometimes. That way people will write or talk that's like a little too fancy for reality. I think it's something people do in their 20s and they grow out of it. But instead of focusing on Elliott Smith the person and his personal problems and various demons and what have you, the stuff most people focus on with Elliott Smith, he really just focused on the songs themselves and how they were constructed. And in particular, the lyrics. which I thought was cool because I've always liked the ambiguity of lyrics. In writing, I don't like ambiguity. I like directness. My favorite book is Atlas Shrugged. You know, I want a sledgehammer to the face. But in music and song lyrics, I always preferred them to be, you know, more like poetry. I also don't like poetry. I could give a shit about poetry. But I like it in music. And I never really knew why. This book kind of helped explain. It would really go through, like, early demos and early live performances of these Elliott Smith songs and how the words changed and basically how he really worked hard. It wasn't just off the top of his head. It wasn't just random stuff. He really worked hard to make these songs. Deliberately, vague's the wrong word, but, like, just that a lot of potential symbolism could be applied to these things. You know, they're not so direct. They're not about him. They're not about specific people. They're just about situations or about sort of not even feelings, but I don't know, just moments in time, moments I don't know how to explain it. I really don't. But this guy builds a pretty strong case for the craftsmanship Elliott Smith put into his lyrics. And even the way he says words, what words he chooses, how they fit into the song, how many syllables, where the stresses are, how that they can mean different things. It's just, I don't know. If you're into Elliott Smith, it's a pretty neat little book. I wish I could explain better. But maybe that's the point, is that he strove to make these things hard to explain, which I think is part of what makes his songs enduring for me and why I just get so into them and I can just listen to them so much and always seem to find new things and find new ways that they're applicable to me. So here's Baby Britain by Elliott Smith.
Fills the past, floating over a sea of vodka, separated from the rest. Fights problems with bigger problems, sees the ocean fall and rise. Counts the waves that somehow didn't hit her, water pouring from her eyes. Alcohol again, very bitter for someone half as smart. You'd be a work of art. You put yourself apart, and I can't help until you start. We knocked another couple back. The dead soldiers lined up on the table, still prepared for an attack. They didn't know they'd been disabled, felt the wave of Russian blood. You won't be happy till the bottle's broken, you're out swimming in the flood. You kept back, you kept unspoken for someone half as smart. You'd be a work of art. You put yourself apart, and I can't help it till you start. You got a look in your eye when you're saying goodbye, like you wanna say on, but it was dim. Revolver's been turned over, and now it's ready once again. The radio was playing Crimson and Clover. London Bridge is safe and sound. No matter what you keep repeating, nothing's gonna drag me down to a death that's not worth cheating for someone half as smart. You'd be a work of art. You put yourself apart, and I can't help until you starve for someone half as smart. You be a work of art. You put yourself apart.
Past this little part where kind of the land juts out into the water a bit, and it's called like a lookout point of some kind, and there's like this big rock, big slippery rock that I was gonna try to climb up, but I couldn't make it. I'm getting old. Tried like two or three times, but there was one part that looked like it would be a pretty decent foothold, but there's a giant puddle right in front of it, so I made it like so I couldn't really use it. I was thinking maybe I would try to run and leap up, but if that fucked up, I'd fall in this huge puddle. I tried to pull myself up, but there was no good grips. What a shame. I don't know why I just thought of this, but I remember at one point when I was dating Ian in New York, she was friends with this girl named Melissa, who was a waitress or a bartender or something at a restaurant owned by this other guy named Keith McNally. This guy's pretty famous in New York, apparently. He runs like 5 or 6 really fancy pants restaurants. Old guy in his 50s. Thought that was interesting. I got introduced as, hey, here's the guy that I'm dating who has the same name as your boss. Anyway, this chick Melissa invited us to a party thrown by these 3 gay dudes. But I guess there was only 2 of them at the time. They were having a bit of a falling out with the middle... No, it was the middle gay dude invited us. Oldest and youngest, I guess, had kind of hooked up and become an item. And we're excluding, in the process of excluding, middle gay guy. But they all still live together in this one fucking apartment that I cannot imagine how much it must have cost. It was like, no more than 2 or 3 blocks from Ground Zero, right in the financial district of New York, in this fancy pants apartment, beautiful looking. And then we went out onto the roof, and being out on the roof at night, just looking out over New York, that was pretty goddamn amazing. That was definitely one of my best memories of New York. I remember there was this one dude there, I don't remember his name anymore, but spent most of the evening chatting with him, and I don't know, he was just really cool, laid back, awesome dude. I don't remember specifically, but I'm pretty sure he wasn't from New York. Very neat random memory. Anyway, real quick, remember that show Daria? It was a spin-off of Beavis and Butthead. I only watched it here and again, but it had a weird funniness to it. It was very different from Beavis and Butthead. And the theme song, I always really liked the theme song. It's this band, I guess they're called Splendora? I should look them up, because I've never heard any of their other stuff. But I like this song. This song reminds me of, I don't know, it makes me think of Japan, where it's just this weird, funny song of like, hey, listen, sorry to fucking impose here, but I have to be direct, and I have to tell you, you're standing on my neck. You know, like, this is the definition of an uncomfortable situation. It's amazing to me that you are not aware of the discomfort you are causing me, and now I must tell you. Yeah, I don't know. I think it's funny, and it makes me think of Japan just in the sense of, man, this is beautiful. Now that I'm a little ways out of town, man, just all these rocks, big rocks and beaches and walking along the water. This is fucking gorgeous, man. Although, I did walk by a little beach earlier with a sign that says, hey, if you find any needles, please alert park authority people. And I remember one time, same thing, I was walking by the water in Vancouver with that girl I was dating out there. And really beautiful, gorgeous day. And then we came across a needle, and it's like, ooh, gross. But it was over by Gastown, really close to the downtown east side, which is junky central. But I wonder what it is about shores and water that makes people want to shoot up there. Is it just because it's pretty? Do people not bug them? I don't know. It seems like a weird venue, weird place. I remember one day, though, back in my hometown, the year before I left, I was living with this guy named Cody. And remember he swung by, or no, I met him downtown once where I was working that day. I used to work at a comic store, and I was out running an errand or something. I ran into him, and he's like, hey man, I've got some rum. I'm going to go sit down by the fucking shore and get drunk. You want to come? I was like, ah, that sounds fun. I do want to come, but I can't. I'm working. Like, damn, but if I hadn't been working, I would have gone and got drunk down by the water. Why not? Yeah, so here's Splendora. You're standing on my neck.
Excuse me. Excuse me. I got to be.
All right, here's a song that I was going to use. It is in an early edit of XO14, which is about moving here to Toronto. Just because I mentioned about going through small towns that I've heard of but don't have never been to, such as Ajax, Ontario. And the reason I've heard of Ajax, Ontario is because it's where Sum 41 is from. They were pretty famous for a while there. And they have this one song called Some Say that I quite enjoy. So I went on YouTube and found a guy doing a cool little acoustic cover. It was two guys. These are two kids from Australia, really young kids, like 12 or 13 or something. And I tried to work that in, but since it's such a passing reference to Ajax, Ontario, it didn't make sense to just play this song so briefly. So I'm going to play it here, because it's kind of a neat little cover of that song. I noticed I was listening to old XOs since I got here. I re-listened to the very first one, The Branding. It's been some time since I've heard that one, and to me, I can see a difference. That one was rushed. I felt like I needed to relax a lot with that one. It's too piled onto itself. Even I started listening to some A Life Well Wasted's Robert Ashley show. In some ways, I think me and him, I got like the best fucking podcast around. Just, I really think we're onto something. Though our shows are fairly different in tone and style. He does all his music himself. It's much more ambient songs, whereas I just I feed in pop songs. But it seemed fast also. A Life Well Wasted, I went and listened to 3.5, the B-side. Really cool episode. But I would have slowed it down. I've definitely noticed the XOs are getting slower and slower and longer and more languid. In particular, this last one, XO15, about marriage. A lot of time, just like, here's the situation. Hey, we're married. Now let's just stop and listen to Elliott Smith's Waltz number 2, you know, and think about this. And I think it worked really well. The one I'm working on now, it's about a guy named Roger Swan, and I'm going to... It could potentially be a very long episode, but I'm going to let it be as long as it needs to be, and as many music breaks as I feel like taking. I feel like I can't take too many. We'll see, though. Maybe this will be the test where I find out that I stretched it too far the other way, and it's becoming too slow. But I like how it's almost becoming like... Well, at number 15 about marriage, it's almost like a mix CD, you know? It's like you're just listening to a cool mixtape with a story being told along with it, and I really think that worked out well. I've listened to that one tons of times, and I really like it. Also because it's not me. I'm not listening to my own voice. I'm listening to someone else's very nice-sounding voice. That helps a lot with my ability to re-listen to them. But yeah, that first one, I think it's a pretty good episode, the first XO, but not quite there yet. That was definitely my demo episode. And then even the second episode I did with my mom, there's little music cues where I'm like, I don't think that was quite right. I think I'm squeezing in too much or trying too hard to just play a little bit of a song, like a little minute snippet. A few little parts where I'm like, already listening back, I'm like, okay, that's not what I would do anymore. But the third episode about the end of the world, I feel like, to put it simply, that one is just perfect. That's the blueprint. That's where I set it in stone. Here it is. There might be minor tweaks here and there, but that's the formula. That's what XO is supposed to be. That's what it's going to be. And that's what I strove toward for the other ones. I really think that's just a gem of a little episode. It turned out so good. That's my mission statement, is episode 3. Things were solidified from that point on. But anyway, here's a song that didn't make it into XO14. I don't know these kids' names, but some kids from Australia doing a cover of Some Say by Sum 41, hailing originally from Ajax, Ontario. Somehow, it's too late to even have faith. Don't think things Alright, it's the next day and it's beautiful today. I was saying it was a little overcast yesterday. Today is super gorgeous. A little tiny bit windy, but that's the other nice thing with Toronto. If you go down by the water, it'll be windy. But if you stay here in the city, the buildings, it's not so bad at all. And I have a way better coffee today instead of what I did yesterday. Was I mixed the instant coffee from the dollar store with some fucking hot chocolate powder. It's fucking bullshit. Today, I broke out the guy that I moved in with, this guy, Graham. You know, he's an adult with an actual life and possessions, so he's got stuff. And one of them is this cool little coffee maker that makes, like, individual cups of coffee, but it's like the espresso machine at the old coffee shop where I used to work. So you gotta pack in the fucking grounds and hook the thing in and do the whole pressurized water process, but it just makes one little cup of coffee. And I also used this like fancy hot chocolate powder that makes like dark chocolate. Put that shit all together. Fucking tasty. And I got another couple tunes that have been in my brain lately. Well, actually, through the because of listening to YouTube covers of shit, that got me searching around for more of that stuff yesterday night. So I found some more cool acoustic YouTube covers I'm gonna play. And this first one, it's some girl from France. Does little ukulele covers of stuff. Scampi, I think she calls herself. And I found this one she did of an NERD song. That, if I remember right, it's from their second album, Fly or Die. It's just really cool, man. And watching this chick in particular, I don't know, just something about her. It's like, I feel this weird, slight sort of kinship. Like, I don't know, like a little bit of, like, I don't know, if I were born a girl instead of a boy, maybe I'd be like this girl. You know, something about, if not a real similarity, then maybe I'm imagining one. Maybe I would want to be like this chick. She just seems cool. So here's her doing maybe the NERD song.
Just all along, when I let you go, loves on me, and no one's telling me a joke.
So listening to that got me in an NERD mood. I went back and re-listened to their third album, Seeing Sounds. Synesthesia, I believe, is the real term for that. When you misinterpret input, you see sounds, you hear colors, shit like that. I remember being a little disappointed in that album at the time. Just because it seems like each NERD album gets a little worse each time. But I did listen to it quite a bit when I was in New York, so listening to it again just brought back a lot of... reminds me of New York a lot, reminds me of Central Park. And now that it's been like a year since I've heard it, listening back, it's actually a pretty cool album. Now that the sort of pressure's off, it's not new, it doesn't need to perform anymore. I especially like that first single, Everybody Knows. Man, what a crazy-ass song that they even released that as a single. As I was reading up about it, even one of the guys in the band was amazed that it really made any kind of impact. I don't think it charted in the States, but it did in some countries. And he's like, man, really? Like, that's kind of such a fucked up weird song. And it is. It's this weird, shitty, dirty, fucked up beat. But then when it breaks down in the middle to the piano part, it's just so awesome. It's a fucking weird song, but I really like it. I played it before, but let's play it again right now. Everybody Knows.
All the girls standing in the line for the bathroom. All the girls standing in the line for the bathroom. All the girls standing in the...
All the girls standing in the...
Yeah. All the girls standing in the line for the bathroom.
Yeah. You know, it's been a minute since we expressed ourselves. It takes a lot of courage to say this, but sounds.
You and your girls are going out tonight. Y'all been planning this all be right. You got something boys can't deny.
Here's a hint.
It's like apple pie. Cut you open and you're just wired. You ain't tired, you wanna cause a riot. Who can say no to you? Wait till they get a load of you.
$100 bills, look.
$100 bills, look. And get a drink, you just laugh.
He talking about an autograph.
You just wanna dance in your reckless path. Close your eyes, see colorful things. You wanna let go, feel with everything. Just a bit more, just to get in the lane. So when you enter the brain, you can put up the pain.
$100 bills.
$100 bills.
$100 bills.
$100 bills.
So from there I started working my way back to the second NERD album. which again, it's like, wasn't as good as the first one, but it's still pretty good. That one really did grow on me. I have a lot of fond memories of that one. I was still rocking a Walkman a bit when that came out. Went through this little phase, and that happened again out in Vancouver, where I would just get into this kind of 80s throwback vibe and decide that cassette tapes were the shit, and I'd start taping albums onto tapes and listening to them on a Walkman. I remember in particular with this second NERD album, one day I was working as kind of a secretary for my parents, their lawyers at the time, and I've always had bad chronic insomnia. So I just remember this one night where I couldn't sleep at all. So I called and left a message on their answering machine at like 2 in the morning, just saying like, dudes, I'm not gonna make it tomorrow. Which is the upside to working with your parents, is you can do shit like that, no one cares. The downside is that there's no need for formal professionalism, because it's just your kid, right? So their constant fighting and bickering was never put on hold in any way. Because, like, hey, whatever, it's just Keith. He's aware of how things work around here. Not a very fun work environment. Well, that's when I was living downtown in Fredericton, my hometown. I happened to have some vodka in the freezer. It was the middle of winter. I remember I made myself a drink, put that tape on in my Walkman, just went walking in the middle of the night, and ended up at this little park by my house, and just sitting on the swings in the middle of the night, swinging while I listened to this. That's a cool little day, nice little memory. So I'm gonna play the very last song, the last official song from the album. There's like a hidden song after it. I don't remember what the song's even called. It's kind of just this weird sort of... Again, it's like a sloppy kind of song. Not as sloppy as fucking Everybody Knows. But it's just, I don't know, it's just fucking cool. Let's just listen to this song.
Sorry that we took so long. You probably thought we forgot your song. It makes us smile just so you know. To see your eyes at shows. I wrote this song while I was drunk. I hope you don't mind that it was wine. But you called me and said you don't want your friends to know. But what if you had to go? What about then? What about then, Mildred? Excuse me, I mean music. But what about then? Sweet chariot of fire, come swing. Nothing but thoughts and feeling, no talk. With the golden bees and silver birds, and dreams are like sheep that come true or hers. Every moment feels like a spin, Mildred. I mean, a spin music. So what about then? Sweet chariot of fire, come swing. As sister, just but a whisper commands your love. The bright sun in the skies, all the flowers harmonize. That's where your starry eyes will stand above.
Mildred, Mildred.
Now fuck, I mean
Mildred.
How the fuck you gonna tell
Mildred,
me it's Mildred? I'm sorry,
Mildred.
Not music. Fuck it.
Sweet chariot of fire, come swing.
yeah, I was recording some ham radio shit yesterday, and then I didn't finish the show, so I started recording more of it today. And,
Well, I didn't know that ham radio could be broken up into several segments.
Yeah, oh, it's a total dirty lie, basically. So yeah, we're just hanging out at this nice little park. It's very pleasant.
It's kind of odd when, I guess an odd way to describe it is it's got a beautiful gate at the front of it.
But no other, the rest of the fence is non-existent.
It looks like the gate can be locked, and it's quite, it's got black bars, but also some kind of marble standing kind of pillars. But then the gate kind of, where it looks like fences would continue, they stop. And it almost looks like they could lock it where you could clearly access the park. So maybe at one time it was more of a private area and that they
Put
it down, but
maybe this was some kind of like crazy death camp and they're tearing down all of the the fences, but they're like, oh, but that gate's sweet.
Yeah, dude. The historical kind of the community is like, we can't completely wipe out the stain of the death camp. Like, we at least should have the gate where when every night that closed that you could hear the dreams of escape just kind of being winced away in the gears.
They probably had death camps in Toronto, right? I'm sure I heard that somewhere.
Yeah, we've been so surprised by Toronto that I could see one more surprise showing up. Really? Wouldn't have thought. It's such a nice place.
So let me ask your opinion on this. Yesterday, it was a little chilly out. You know, I had to wear gloves and shit when I was walking around yesterday.
Me too.
And today's quite a bit nicer, but man, yesterday, you know, it was cold enough outside that I didn't want to, like, crack a window open, but somebody was cranking the heat in that place where I live. Just insane. So the point where I actually had to open the window. Where today, it's like, okay, that makes sense. But last night, it just felt wrong. I'm like, what the fuck? It's still winter. So I put on my little Twitter. I'm like, man, I don't care if it is winter in Canada. I'm opening a window. Who the fuck's in charge of this place? Because I post pointless dumb shit on my Twitter.
Because everyone else in that place, when they read your Twitter account, because they know who you are, they're like, wow, Mr. McNally's pretty pissed about it. So your wall's thin enough that if somebody cranks heat in another part of it, you feel the effect?
No, like the heat in my room was on, but I don't have any control over it. There's like nowhere.
Oh, it's kind of old schooly that, like, if the floor or the building requests heat, everybody gets it. There's not.
Right. Yeah. So, but here's the thing, is this guy Kale I know from Halifax, he posted like, now I'm aware you probably don't own a watch, and touche, sir, I do not.
Yeah.
He's like, but at least get a calendar. It's not winter, it's spring. And I guess he's probably technically right, and today it feels like spring.
I was really surprised, but yeah, on the 21st, the seasons changed.
Yeah, so I guess technically that's true, but I just feel like that's not, you can't go by calendar dates in Canada, because that would mean our winter's only 3 months long, and that's just not true.
Yeah, it's scientifically true, but not
in our hearts.
Yeah, not mentally. Yeah, like, to me, winter starts late November. Like, well, also, like, would it be November 21st when winter, when would winter start? It'd have to be sometime in December.
Yeah, I'm not even sure. I never paid attention to that stuff.
I love the idea of some weather guy, or just somebody who even knows basic knowledge. He's like, fucking talking about, of course, weather, like, winter starts on blank, you know.
For years I did not know what the months of the year were, because we had a little song in first grade that we had to sing in French, of course, and I just kind of mumbled my way through it. So I knew, you know, during the school year, like September, October, November, December, January, February, I knew up to February for sure, so I guess I knew half, and I had no idea the rest. It was just a jumble in my brain of just spring and summer, and it's like, I didn't need to know. I was in like 8th grade before I finally made myself learn. I'm like, I have to learn this. This is ridiculous.
That is ridiculous. I'm not sure what I was like, no, man, that happens to everybody. I have to admit, sometimes, April and May, I sometimes get screwed up. Though most of the other ones are
I still have to say them to myself.
Yeah.
You know, to remember.
But yeah, it is a nice dog dangling day. Like,
so maybe we should find somewhere to wander. Although, before we do, let me introduce a song that I had queued up that I was going to play. This is a song called In the Meantime by a British band called Space Hog. Total one-hit wonder. I played it in XO14 about coming to Toronto. And my friend Matt, who introduced this song to me, told me when it started, because it was like my I'm in Toronto happy song. He's like, oh man, that was sweet. Just that was a good musical choice. And I was like, I know. Anyway, this is a guy on YouTube just doing like an acoustic cover of it, and he does an awesome job. And I'm going to put the link in the little show notes or whatever for this, and just watching him do it is awesome. He's like so into it, just like loving this song.
Here, let's listen together.
I've done that before with like me and Ian in New York, where we had a little splitter so we could both put in headphones and listen to songs while sitting on a park bench. But I feel like that would be far too romantic for two dudes to do.
Yeah, especially the way you said it.
Yeah. It was fine with the chick, but.
Yeah, it's almost like it's almost like a couple of steps away, like sci-fi wise, of us connecting our, like, the chips in our brain. They're like, hey, I'm listening to this song. Why don't you listen? It's like, yeah.
Yeah, totally. We're all getting there. Before we die, we'll have the music in our heads for sure. Remember in Futurama how the subliminal dreams? Yeah. Is it dreams about those like fantastic underpants?
Yeah. Him in his underwear with the spreadsheet to that girl he wanted to sleep with. He's like, huh? See that? And I love how we advertised on billboards, magazines, commercials, just like lists like 10 things, but not in our dreams. It's just like, yeah, we had standards back there where you could put advertising.
Anyway, I might use this Space Hog thing again because since I'm doing another show eventually down the road about going back to New York, so maybe as I return to Toronto, this will become my recurring theme song or something, my Toronto theme song.
Your, like, entrance music?
Yeah. Yeah, totally. It is. It's a really good song, as my listeners will now know because it's going to play right now. Bam. This is why it doesn't bother me at all that no one listens to AM radio. It's so easy to make. Who gives a shit?
Just like you. just like you, just like you.
Alright, time to wrap up this show. I'm on my way home. Me and Chris went and found a Japanese restaurant because I wanted to try this stuff called takoyaki. It's octopus balls. They're pretty good. A bit of a search, though, to find them. But it's cool that I got to try them. The joys of the big city combined with the internet. You can just go online and be like, takoyaki in Toronto, hook me up, man. And it does. Well, real quick, let's play one more little YouTube acoustic song. This is an Alexis on Fire song called Mailbox Arson. I just think it's neat to find acoustic covers of Alexis on Fire songs. That's why I was looking up NERD songs too. It's just fun to look up bands that don't lend themselves easily to that sort of thing and see how it turns out. So one last thing, let's end with a video game nerd song. There's this guy named Jonathan Mann, used to be known as the Game Jew, and he did this thing back in like 2005 called the Mario Opera that you can get from his site for like $5. I totally recommend it. You can download it for free too, but I actually paid the $5 because I think it's cool. And then you can get the demos for the Act 2, and I don't think he ever completed anything beyond that. But at the end of Act 1 is just this little song not about the trials and travails of Mario from the opera. It's about Shigeru Miyamoto himself, the guy who made the first Super Mario and Mario Brothers games, Donkey Kong, Legend of Zelda. The guy's made a bunch of fucking fantastic shit. So it's just a little song about that dude and what it's like to be a little kid and to play his games. I remember I didn't really dig this song the first time I heard it, but it kind of grew on me. It's kind of catchy. So, by Jonathan Mann, here is Shigeru Miyamoto, the Nintendo guy. Song.
And they're not just video games, they're works of art. And I want the whole wide world to know that everything he's done has come from his heart. And that's what makes him different.
different. Step back or you might miss it. Taking the whole picture, he's me, a motel.
Captured in my mind.